A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Taylor.
I've got a cup of tea.
He does, and Josh Brown.
Hiya, I don't have one, and now I feel like a mug.
I do. I was thinking if we sort of, we make it a weekly thing, people get a cup of tea every Wednesday. I'm just saying, you could start a movement. Why not? Podcast
fan. I'm amazed by the levels of the joke in there. Like, does he feel like a mug because I've got a mug, or is it what is going on here?
Like Twin Peaks, that's for you to figure out. I've left it ambiguous. I've given you the bits you need to figure it out for yourself there.
It's very much us recording this at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but it's all right. Don't worry about it. We've got plenty of things to talk about. There are lots of new games, to be honest. Resident Evil 8 out very soon, but there is obviously the demos to talk about. There was the Village one last week. There was the Castle one last Sunday. And we can talk a little bit about Returnal, not too much. We've got the full review coming up on the channel very soon, and we'll dip into a little bit of Nier. But before then, Benroy, you wanted to talk a little bit about Republic Commando, the Star Wars re-release of a beloved game that you snapped up and apparently is not very good anymore.
A beloved game that is aged like cheese you've left in a sock under the bed and then has been moved from 7 different places you've lived over the years. It's just, especially like, I'm playing on hard. I imagine it's like maybe a little more forgiving or like medium or whatever.
Right.
But also, like, you have to go into it's weird. Like, I was like, how do I play on hard? And you have to go into the menu of the game. Like, the menu of the game is like a pause menu. And from there, I was like, what?
Change it.
No, because when you go new game, it goes like, do you want to play on difficulties? Where it just goes in. It just, you just flow in. But that was one of the things that just like, what's going on here? But from, it's very sort of like weird because it's one of the first Star Wars games at that point that limited your ammo. And then after a while, there's just no ammo and the game goes from use your specialized gun to just use whatever Trandoshan like Uzi is lying about, or use this shotgun, which is one of the worst shotguns I've ever held in a video game in my illustrious life.
Because you're on hard though, would there not be more ammo on the lowers?
I don't know. Like, they probably don't adjust the level placement. It's probably just the more damage taken and thing for health.
It's like a really intense tactical thing.
That tactical. The AI is pathetic and stupid and just crap to the point where unless you like tell them to stand in one place, they're just going to go and give everyone a kiss, get shot by a turret, and then they all like, and then they're like, oh, now I'm going to heal you. Oh, and it's like one after the other walking into a mousetrap as they all fall down, and you're like, oh, God, man, just chill out.
Never know what to expect coming into this Wednesday podcast. And as you know, living up to its, you know, weekly name at this point, like, I did not expect to come in here and hear Ben Roy go on an impassioned shoot against Republic Commando. Not what I was expecting.
So can I get a time frame? I've got the bullets, I've got the rounds, I've got the scope mounted. Can I please say something?
Yeah, you need to jump in with this?
No, I meant for you. Like, you've prepped this.
Yeah, it's basically the AI haven't aged well. And then the points when they separate you from your squad, it's even sort of like, oh, okay, this is just drab. And I just want to get through this sort of thing. For me, in that era of Star Wars games, yeah, it's probably better than something like the Clone Wars game that came out on GameCube and it was like 5 minutes long or whatever. But like, it doesn't hold a candle to like a Jedi Outcast or Academy or something like that. And I feel like, when I was a younger child, it was maybe better, but now I'm just like, I'm just going to finish you and then I'm going to say goodnight.
Because I'll make a super quick side point. That game has that really weird thing where you can see the helmet on screen, like it's an existing hood. I hate that. and it's only in like three games. Like it's in that and the Metroid Prime games, and like a couple of the Ghost Recons. Right. I just no.
What I'll say is that I'm sure you and somewhere will just be triggered by this or like explode. Stars Bounty Hunter.
Yes.
Much better game of that era. Get yeah. that. Better game, not Republic Command though, because my God, is that aged like cheese? Both available on PlayStation Now and wherever else games
it is. Josh, do you have any thoughts on maybe your childhood thoughts on these games? Are you going to be going back to them basically?
I will definitely go back to Republic Commando, mostly because I hadn't played it and I heard good things, but now I've got this opposing view that I'm going to have to, you know, figure it out for myself. It was a Star Wars game that I didn't play because I used to have this bias against first-person Star Wars games because I was like, what's the point of that? I don't want to see this from first person. I want to be a Jedi. I want to be jumping around. And I remember playing, you know, one of the Kyle Katarn games or maybe even Jedi Academy, you know, when he started first person, I thought, whoa, hang on. This is not what I signed up for. I wanted
my
to
money.
Be
I want to see my character.
I want to see it.
I think as we should move on, because we shouldn't talk about this game anymore because it's old. Like it's probably just the fact that it's like it's a squad-based shooter and the AI are just bad. And like there's like would you call them like a? I'm gonna call it a tank, but when I speak about these big enemies that take a lot of damage, I call them Lesnars because Brock Lesnar's a big scary man, and it's like Lesnar of a Geonosian with its giant cannon of like ray of doom is always going at you, and then for the first half of the game, they like to shove enemies that always want to just physically hit you, right. So you're like sort of like everyone's trying to kiss you, and you've got this big laser beams coming from the sky, and it's just like. Just get back a bit and leave me alone, will you? Come on. As everyone else is just falling on the floor and dying.
So you wouldn't recommend it. That's where you're at.
It's like, I think it's like £7. Why not? Play on easy. Play on easy, probably. But just don't rely on the AI. Only ask them to heal you and that's it.
Or just don't play on hard. I'm sure it's a lot easier if you just don't go in on hard.
It's not even hard. It's like, there's a quick saves. Well, I guess that's good. More games should have quick saves.
Yes, I agree. Anyway, in terms of newer things, Benroy, you also jumped into the Resident Evil Castle demo that was on Sunday night. This is a much shorter demo, I think. I guess they give you a half an hour window, but you can get through it in about 20 minutes. You sort of just explore the castle. You go up against one of the Dimitris sisters. Lady Dimitris isn't in it, I don't think. I actually forgot this thing was out. I played the village one, not the castle one.
Lady Dimitris. Thankfully, we know how to say it now because Ethan says it in the bloody demo after them having their Capcom sort of thing and then everyone else reading the name and then Capcom like, no, Dimitris. But she's in it for a second. She's getting a bottle of wine out of her. Did you two play the visual
your own heart?
Did you play? Yeah. Well, in her bottles, she's got wine caskets in the cell. I won't spoil it too much, Josh. But there's like, they turn people into wine because, you know, they like to suck the old blood. But yeah, she's in there for a second. She walks off. You get chased by, can't remember, the vampire's daughter who turns into flies.
Yeah.
She's in
there. What her name is. Fly girl.
And she forces you down into a basement where you get to sort of fight. I'm going to say this game's equivalent of the Molded, because you know the Molded were like pretty crap and like you could take them on. These little sort of like hooded goblin boys that are like, are you semi-vampire, semi-zombie?
Are they not like familiars? Like they've sort of been bitten, but they're not fully turned yet.
I think they're another level of like, they're not going to let them. I think there's in Vampire Fiction where you can turn someone, but not let them fully turn. So they're sort of like more, and they're sort of like that. And they can use like swords as well, but they're not too clever, but they take a lot. On standard, didn't play on hardcore, don't worry everyone. They take like say five shots to the face sometimes. So it's kind of I'm looking forward to seeing what's going on here. I'd recommend if you did play or do play it next weekend, buy the shotgun from the Duke. Also the Duke references merchant from Resident Evil 4.
Yes,
which is to point out, I thought he was the same merchant. I thought he'd really let himself go and he was that merchant, but it's apparently like a network of merchants and references that one and says like, what are you buying?
And then he goes, he says that, and he goes, my mate said that once before. And you're just like, what?
But a literal banter merchant. It's
he is. But the castle starting off, it's Resident Evil style. You crawl through, like, say, a few secret passages to get somewhere. You get chased for a bit. Mm. And then the fodder enemies, I think I'm going to be more happy of these than in Resident Evil 7. This gave a totally different vibe to the village stuff. It was less scary, I would say, because I'm not going into a cornfield where things are growling at me and they're going to kill me. But yeah, for all in all, I think because I had already been through that section before and the visual experience, I wasn't so terrified. But
I do have a couple quick questions. Yeah. Like, because they've made it so that the persistent enemy is like, I mean, obviously it started years ago. You can argue that Nemesis was the first one, whatever. But I feel like since Resident Evil 2's Mr. X and then Nemesis, and now with Dimitrescu, or the sister, or your daughter, sorry. How does that stuff feel? Like, is there any part of you that gets sick of getting stuck in the rooms, or does it feel like there's new dynamics to the way that she pursues you and things like that?
Well, this daughter, I forget her name again, sorry. But she attacks you and then sort of like lets you go, and you, because she's not a nemesis, you can walk around her and you don't get thrown to the floor like you would do with Mr. X. And I feel like it's a different compliment, and it's not like a also like a Dr. Salvador from 4, where it's an instant kill, dead, you're gone, sorry, right, sort of thing. So I think it's a nice mixture. I'm curious to see how Lady Matrice is, because in the trailers we've seen, I won't go into specifics because I know Josh hasn't seen any of this. I don't want to say anything, but I feel like she might be more of a one hit slap sort of, like, or maybe you get two of her. But I feel like with the daughters, because they're talking to you as well, like Mr. X doesn't talk to you. Nemesis goes, "Stars, give me a kiss." And but these ones, you get, she's talking about how she really misses warm man flesh and she wants to just drink your blood and just come here. Like, it's really sort of like chilling, and you can tell she's taking her time as well. She's not really running after you, she's walking, right, and you're covered with flies, and it's more listening to it and more like the game forcing you in a direction. Because if you were in that area, you'd probably take about another half an hour to have a look around before you went and grabbed the thing you need to do.
I saw like a couple of playthroughs where people were just dumping like entire clips into like the what she's called, but I did look up their names, but there's three of them, so it's like whatever the one that's made of flies is called. And you know, dumping an entire clip into that person, it's just like, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but to some degree, sometimes when you're stuck in a room with one of these persistent enemies and there's not that much you can do other than sort of lure them away a bit and hope they stay over there for a bit, and then you run back again and it all gets a bit Alien Isolation. Like, I'm kind of hoping that they put more gameplay possibilities in there, maybe things in the environment that you can trigger to sort of like, you know, space you away from the persistent enemy. Like, is there any sort of hint that they're doing anything other for this one?
My guessing is the daughters will all be sort of like sections. It won't be like you'll be in the castle and you're going to be constantly chased by them. I think Dimitrescu may be one of them, but there seems to be sort of like passageways within the castle that I've seen so far, which are going to be used like shimmy through. And I reckon, just like within Resident Evil 2, less so Resident Evil 3, but in Resident Evil 2, you will know when you're going to be end up triggering her. So I can have it around. It's a handy gimmick, but if it's the whole game, then it becomes a bit tedious. But then again, like, I loved Alien Isolation, so, you know. But even that surprisingly, going back to that, that breaks it up a lot more than what I'm not saying you personally, Scott, but what you will remember. Like, there are like, say, like, at least a third of that game is downtime away from the Xenomorph, and I feel like that's going to be the case here.
Yeah, I think one of the, like, the best ways to do any persistent enemy is you have to have some downtime, because if it is just that constant state of, like, oh my God, I'm about to get killed, it's an instant kill, or I'm getting hounded by this thing, and it's just punching me from off screen or whatever, that can get really annoying.
But I couldn't do any damage to her with any of the stuff available. She would just sort of like morph away and let the bullets go through. So, you know, at this point, it's just a runaway sort of jobby.
Because I love the realization in 7 that you can put Jack down. Like, if you empty enough bullets into him, he will go down. He sits back up again, like Undertaker style. But like, you can get him to go down for a little bit. Josh, what's your thoughts on, like, I guess the persistent enemies and the way that it's like a signature thing, and or more of a signature thing in Resident Evil now?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like Jack Baker in Resident Evil 7, I really enjoyed that at the time. You know, like the first moment where he comes through the wall and you're not expecting him to just be able to do that. I remember that blowing my mind. But he did get to a point where, you know, I just needed something from a specific room. And I was like, just leave me alone. And especially because it's first person, you know, when you get in one of those grab animations and you're just constantly locked into it, it can feel a little disorientating and a little bit frustrating. I thought Mr. X was much better handled. I know a lot of people had their problems with how he was just always there, but I always felt like when I was facing off against him and I was exploring the Raccoon City Police Department, I always felt like I wasn't getting locked into those same frustrating moments over and over again, or getting into a position where he was no longer scary and he was just a nuisance. So hopefully with Resi 8, you know, they kind of like blend the best of both worlds and have that unpredictability. But like Roy was saying, you know, hopefully have them in specific sections, so it's not the full game. You don't get to those positions where you're just like, come on, dude, and I need that wrench. Give me the wrench. Just let me just let me shimmy past you. Yeah, you know, what? Stop doing the big hard man thing. Just let me get by.
Jack, this daughter was better than Jack, where you weren't getting turned around, you were getting grabbed, but then you could sort of almost then just walk past her and keep going. But there was another thing that I forgot to mention, which I said to you this morning, Scott. It's like, I might turn the haptics off after a few hours of this, or I might turn it right down, because when those goblin lads in the dungeon were taking 5 bullets and the chugger's really fighting you with just a pistol, and you need to get rounds off, and there's like, say, 5 of them at once at some points, and you need to sort of like put bullets into them down. The haptics was, I get it, but it's getting in the, I think it was
in the way.
Too intrusive, to the point where like, I didn't think I'd be turning it off, but I probably will, especially for like a hardcore run and stuff like that.
We talked about it a few times, but like the haptic stuff, I think for me, it goes like, what if a game needs you to be responding to stuff fast? Like if it's something that's twitch, like you're twitching, it's a twitch reaction shooter, Call of Duty. Like I turned them off in Black Ops because I was like, I want to return fire as fast as possible, and I'm fighting this trigger for even a half millisecond is enough for me to not get the shot off, and it just doesn't feel satisfying. It feels like it gets in the way. Obviously, we're going to talk about return in a little bit, but like Josh, I think you've been one of the biggest like supporters of haptics. Are you leaving this stuff on like regardless?
I think so. And even though, you know, Ben, I just mentioned there that for Resi 8, I haven't played the demos yet. I'm just sort of like just keeping away from them until the game actually releases. But one of my biggest drawbacks with Resi 7 from the parts that I've actually played out of VR is that the gunplay just, it was quite good, but it just never felt there for me. It never felt like as weighty or as impactful as it should have been. And I like in Resi games where you kind of just have a pistol or a shotgun, you've got a bit of ammo, but every shot feels like it should count. And for me, again, you know, not having the first-hand experience, I'm quite looking forward to the haptics perhaps facilitating that or making the impact feel a bit more visceral and a bit more powerful, so it doesn't feel like I'm kind of like a bit floaty or, you know, firing off these ineffective guns. Because from what I can gather, like in most recent Resi games, like the enemies take a lot of bullets to go down in some cases, and I feel like if I have that resistance, it would at least feel like I'm doing some impactful damage. So you know, in theory I'm going to keep them on, but in practice I might end up being annoyed as well.
I guess it's I'm kind of like with the way that Roy described it, where it's like if I'm going up against a bunch of enemies, I'm just trying to get some shots off, and I'm kind of half fighting the controller and just to sort of respond to the stuff on screen. Then it takes me out of it because I'm suddenly aware of the piece of tech in my hand and not the experience that's on screen. But I guess that's going to change game by game. One thing I was going to ask as a wider thing for Resident Evil 8, Ben Roy, for you first, do you have any wider predictions for like the structure of the game? Like, do you feel like this is it? Because I feel like they're hiding something massive and we haven't seen any of it yet. I just feel like they're so upfront with like, here's the village. It's quite short because we've already seen the transition into the castle in the demo, or at least you can see it right there at the end of the first demo. And then if we do the castle stuff, you know, you're fighting the daughters, you fight Lady Dimitrescu, but then we have all the separate stuff with Harry Mann, with Chris Redfield, Heisenberg, with everything else. Do you think they've got something else in mind?
Man, there's something going on with Ethan. There's a reason we've not seen Ethan's face yet. And I don't know if you've heard my prediction before, Josh.
I don't think Josh has.
Ethan's going to be tell everyone because it's good.
Ethan's going to be some sort of important character. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Ethan's Wesker, maybe Ethan's someone else.
We've
not seen, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, why haven't we seen Ethan's face? Because in Resident Evil 7, when he's unconscious and you become Mia, his face is on the floor and he gets pulled away. And then when you see him again, he's got his mouth exposed and the rest of him is covered. And we've just never seen his face since. And I feel like there's going to be some sort of reveal with him. There's going to be a reveal with Mother Miranda, that because she's been...
Jill Valentine, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, Jill, Claire, anyone. I feel like you've got to bring some old characters back at this point, especially if this is Chris's last hurrah. Like, you can't have Chris's last hurrah and then Claire not be there in some sort of form. And also, we've had this trait once before of Alex Wesker in Resident Evil Revelations 2, morphing her mind into a young child. So if she can do that, why can't another member of Project Wesker do it? Right. Albert himself, and then either go shift into Ethan, or even, I don't know, maybe it's Jake. Maybe Jake Mueller's around here. You know what I mean? Like,
Jake even existed for a sec, but it's just like, I guess they need something to pay off because they have all that artwork of him just having a complete silhouette shadow face. And either that's because they want to have an anonymous character, a blank slate that you can project yourself onto and play that way. But I also feel like it's Capcom, it's Resident Evil. Like, you might as well do something big with it.
There's also like, you see a few frames of this underground thing, and I was like, I can sort of like piece together, like, I definitely think this might be one of the first. Like the whole the umbrella logo, right, has not really been in the past few games much at all. Not even like six, but it was shown in five for like a second when they went into the underground labs in Africa. This is tied to the house structure of the region. Like the houses are based around, like you see the four logos, right? This is all I'm describing in the trailer. Sorry, Josh, if you want me to just say
stop. No, go on.
But this is all, it's all the four houses, Heisenberg, Dimitris, and the other two that we haven't really had named yet. They're tied to this logo, like specifically their house, and it's everywhere. And
what do you mean, like from an aerial view, where they are on the map looks like an umbrella logo?
When it's like you see the umbrella logo, and then you have the Dimitris logo, the Heisenberg logo, BB, and there's four houses in the region, like four families, like in the game, your houses like Game of Thrones, and not just the house where someone lives, but but yeah, it's integrally tied to that. I don't know, this might be one of the origin sites of Umbrella, because this dates back to the 50s, and it would time with like the early pharmaceutical days, because they didn't become Umbrella Corp properly until like the late 70s. So, you know, there's all this sort of thing tied in there. And I feel like and Dimitris has been around and lording over that area for 70 years now. So it's just, what are they sort of doing? And I feel like they're using folk tales of werewolves and vampires more so, because they're not going to be legit like mystical magic stuff. It's, I think they're using the folk tales to keep the surrounding stuff in line. And you know, you could say, oh, why is no one there? Oh, because they're scared of werewolves. And the government goes, lol, there's no such thing as werewolves. And you know what I mean? I feel
actually,
like
that is, if they go back far enough, where Umbrella's been doing these like ancient experiments for so long, yeah, that produced these weird hybrids before they quote unquote refined it into even the zombie style, you know, reaction to the different formulas and stuff, that the werewolves and the different creatures are all like those initial ancient experiments, then that would be a cool twist. I don't know if that's going to maybe mean that Ethan's identity is tied into Umbrella, that he's like the descendant of someone from Umbrella.
Well, again, one more. Sorry, Josh. Every time I see one thing, I'm scared. Everyone says his name at one point in the trailer, and I don't know if they just clipped out the Duke saying his name and
Dimitri. Oh, when they say Ethan,
and Heisenberg, but everyone seems to know this lad as if he's like someone special, and I also think that Mia, maybe, who do you know anything about this, Josh?
I do. I appreciate your concern. I do know this stuff.
And this isn't me like shooting on you either, like, for anyone. It sounds like I'm just scared, because I just don't want to ruin it. But when she becomes one with lead in her face, I feel like that might not be real Mia. I feel like that the Mia that we got out of Resident Evil 7 was a replicant, or maybe she's become something else since, because everyone that's had viruses in the past, Jill, Sherry, they've all been affected by it. They've all like had some sort of abilities, and they ain't gonna just come out of this all happy, especially that gooey sort of mole stuff. And Evelyn got into their minds and projected stuff. So I feel like
it's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Mia might not be Mia anymore, and if not, she's saying... the reason their child is from that virus, and that's maybe why they need the child for Mother Miranda. I'm just going into this. You know, I need to be pulled out of this because I did a video about it last week. And I'm just falling deeper and deeper.
We should heartily recommend your theory video because it's awesome. That's already on the channel. That's also got the stuff in about what's really going on with Lady Dimitrescu and the daughters, and some mad fun in regards to Wesker and his connection to Resident Evil 8. So that stuff's out there too. We can kind of connect some stuff back to the haptics point. I was going to ask this about Returnal to sort of pivot into Returnal stuff. Josh, how does that game handle haptic feedback? How does it play? I know you're like blown away by it. So just where's your mind at on the old Returnal?
Lads, you know, I mean, I've been playing it nonstop for the past week or so now. Like,
just, you discovered 2 a.m.
I've discovered the time 2 a.m. for once. I feel like you both. My voice is going, my brain's going, my eyes are going. I'm just, it's all Returnal at the moment. And like you said at the beginning, we're going to have like the full review out later on this week. But I can talk a little bit about what in the first two biomes and stuff about the DualSense, because the DualSense is like the crown jewel of the overall experience, the thing that ties it together. I think me included, you know, watching the trailers for it previously, watching all of the marketing, the gameplay videos that Sony's put out at State of Players or whatever, it looks pretty good, but it doesn't look necessarily that special. And I think that's because the DualSense is so much a part of it, and you don't get to convey that through the trailers. Like, you just don't get a sense of it until it's in your hand. Like, it's crazy how much immersion it adds, not just with the way it gives you more functionality with how you can, you know, use specific items. For instance, you know, I've mentioned in the preview one we did, Scott, like, if you hold the left trigger halfway down, you get to do the regular aiming zoom. If you pull past the tension, you get to activate the alt fire. So you're getting like more dynamism from your controller in that sense. But it's the way like it uses rumble, the way it uses that resistance, the way it uses the inbuilt sound to kind of, you know, connect you to that character more. You know, you mentioned when you're playing Black Ops or something, you're very aware that you're like using the controller, it takes you out of it. For me, when I'm playing Returnal, at least, it makes me feel like I'm in the game more. It makes me feel like I have this connection with whatever weapon, you know, the character's using, with whatever augment she has on whatever given moment. And it's funny how it kind of like affects it, because it's not something you're necessarily thinking about. You just sort of, it just blends with what you're seeing on screen to create this like really immersive like experience that knocks down like the barrier between you and the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where, you know, I played it in Astro Boy had it too. Astro Boy.
I keep calling Astro Boy. Yeah.
Astro Boy had it as well. But that was obviously like, you know, a tech demo. And I was wondering, oh, well, is anyone going to use this functionality to its, you know, biggest extent in a proper game? Mm-hmm. In Returnal actually does. And it just makes me so excited to see how it's going to evolve, because it's so good now. And we're like 6 months or whatever, I don't know what time is, a few months away from like the consoles actually coming out. And it's this good now. And it makes me kind of, you know, think about going to other games, older games. And I feel like if I go from Returnal to a third person shooter like it, I'll be missing that functionality. I'll be missing that added layer. I think that's awesome.
How's the DualSense battery life with everything kicking off that much when you're playing like constantly?
I haven't noticed it be any worse than regular. You know, the DualSense doesn't have an amazing
mine
thing.
Mine is like 3 hours. If
I had mine proper died while playing Abe's Oddworld Odyssey. I'm saying the wrong thing. Because the chanting is tied and it vibrates the controller and pushes the thing down.
Anything
and,
with, I mean, I was just playing Windjammers. Anything with regular speaker vibration just kills it.
So Oddworld, Oddworld uses all three of those at once and was rinsing my controller. But yeah, back to the...
Was that kind of the same thing on Returnal? Though? I mean, like, I guess you can just have it plugged in. You can just sort of try and charge a lot. But does it feel like those, like that amount of features coming from the controller does burn through it a bit faster? Like, I guess it's almost the same as like any other sort of AAA thing.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I'm sure it probably does. Not to the point where I was playing Returnal thinking, man, like this is rinsing. This is going through this battery life really quick. You know, if you've played Miles Morales, or if you've played Demon's Souls or Call of Duty Black Ops or something, or Astro Bot / Boy, I think it's like just the same level. Like I say, like, you know, I could tell that the controller was using a lot of juice, especially when it was raining. I was getting this really dynamic vibration across the board, but I was never kind of running to plug it in during key moments or anything like that.
Fun fact from that, the rain thing, the whole idea that the controller can mimic the feeling of rain. This comes from Danny O'Dwyer over on Noclip. Apparently Team Asobo, the developers of Astrobot, their whole thing is that they get given text super early, like the super early hardware or whatever for the PlayStation 5. And they sit and just think of like, okay, what are all the different implementations of this tech that we can think of? And so that's why Astrobot is such a showcase of all these different ways that it could be used. Like a bow and arrow, or like, you know, textures you could walk on, or the idea of you know, rain and stuff, which their findings then get given to all the first party teams, or like get shown, like, oh, this is how you would do rain, this is how we programmed it in, which I think is why Returnal kind of has that feeling similar to Astrobot, because I guess they would have worked with Team Asobo. You were saying that it really gets you, like it's got such a loop. Like, I mean, you'd kind of described it to me on the old preview as like Doom meets Control meets Hades or whatever, which for me is like the perfect explanation of it. How's your thoughts on it changed over time? How does it handle story stuff as well? At the minute you're only limited to the first two biomes
tell me the ending.
Yeah, I'll just it's a cool like this. The story stuff is like fascinating, just the way they've tried to like mesh, you know, like the structure of a roguelike with the story of like a Sony character driven thing. Like I think it's something that Ben Roy would quite dig because it's really like sci-fi horror, like infused, and you're getting these sort of flashes to a potential past, a potential future. Every single time you die, you know, you get still images. Oh, well, not still images, but like a quick couple second glimpse at certain images that you can then connect. The more you die, the more stuff you uncover in the world and stuff. And I think what it does so well is that when I've played roguelikes in the past, when I've done, you know, runs and stuff, sometimes I feel like, not that I'm wasting my time, but I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not getting anything from it. You know, obviously I'm understanding the layout a bit more, understanding the enemies, playing for high scores or as far as I can go or whatever. But with Returnal, every single part of these systems and every single mechanic kind of like rewards you for doing a run, whether that's, you know, getting to grips with the consumables, getting to find upgrades, getting to level up your guns, getting to find a new bit of story information or a bit of a audio log or something. So every single time you're doing something, you feel like you're making progress, even if you just might be getting your ass kicked and like going back to the start. And for me, as someone who could never really connect with a roguelike in that way before, like I was engrossed in it. In, you know, I said in that preview, once you get in like Returnal's rhythm, once you get into the flow of it, like, you know, a lot of games get criticized for being kind of like mindless, for your eyes glazing over, for you becoming like one with the game. But like, it takes a lot of skill to pull that off. Totally. And when you're in this game and you sort of just like feel like it might as well be plugged straight into your veins and you're like just interfacing with it. Like that is something special, man.
I haven't had that feeling in a long time where you completely become like super synergistic with the experience. You're not even thinking of anything around you. You're just the game. I haven't had that set of mechanics in a game in a long time. Ben Ray, your thoughts on Returnal? I think you're a bit more, I've been just mining away at the glorious rock that is Josh Brown to get as much information on this game as possible. But what are your thoughts on the old £70 Returnal?
I feel like I'm being a bit ignorant with the whole £70 stance and the roguelite stance and seeing more and more, when hearing more and more about like the sci-fi sort of...
I think the price stuff is totally valid. I think a lot of people are going to be, that's just too much.
But it's also, even if I wasn't sort of like that the price, even if I took away everything that was going to stop me now, like, because it's kind of around some other things, but the way that Josh was mentioned about this, is it sci-fi horror elements you said or something like that? Or
yeah, totally.
Yeah, just and the visuals of it, the more I look, is like, ah, oh, this looks like I like this sort of thing. But, and I'm like everyone else, I'm desperate to play a game that is made for this new generation. And I feel like even though Resident Evil 8 is going to count for that, because I feel like they downported it for the past gen.
I'm very curious about that, yeah.
But I think, like, because I forget, like, the Phantom Pain came up for PS3, like, mm-hmm. you what? And, like, Shadow of Mordor. But yeah, like, I just need to know, like, how does it feel like the Sony story? I mean, the Sony experience, or like the creme de la creme sort of thing with this whole, the roguelike element of it being reset, because the first roguelike that really sort of grabbed me was like Void Bastards and Spelunky, those sort of games. And Void Bastards had some funny writing, and Spelunky had maybe like a bit of text, but nothing. I was never there for the narrative stuff. So I'd need to, like, I don't have my faith in the narrative element, even though, because like Housemarque before, I've done like Resogun and Dead Nation, games that I've enjoyed, but again, like, it's more like the score, time attack, the game, it's the raw gameplay rather than the story thing. And I think I want some sort of heavy sci-fi story here, and am I going to get that? Like, I don't know, whatever you can say without Jim knocking you out.
it's definitely like, I'm not going to pretend it's like The Last of Us or pretend it's like God of War or anything in terms of its story, because I don't think it is, because that's definitely not necessarily its focus. Like, first and foremost, it's like a mechanical treat. Like, if you like solid mechanics, if you like gameplay loops, like, that's what it is first and foremost. But it does have this extra element of story. And what's so appealing is, like, the atmosphere of the locations and, like, the world and the lore. Like, the mythology is, again, like, surprisingly deep. Like, there's a real richness to the places you're exploring. And they're more than just, like, empty rooms to fill up with enemies, you know? Like, there's a real story being told as you go. And it's because it's so steeped in that sci-fi horror kind of... you know, aesthetic. Like, for me, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for these big technical boys, like, flying around and, oh, what's going on? I need to go deeper into the world. Why am I in this time loop? What's this house that keeps appearing and stuff? And you do get those character-driven moments where, like, the perspective switches. Like, this is all in the trailer, I think, or something they've showed up before.
Yeah.
The perspective switches, you walk into, like, this house, and you get these kind of, like, story dumps that you can connect the dots with, like, later, where it becomes, like, more overtly horror focused. And I loved those little segues. I just think it's like, it's so well paced, because there's always something new to break it up. You know, even though you are just doing a lot of fighting, you're doing a lot of boss battles, sub boss battles, you're picking up a lot of data logs, you're scanning a lot of things. Like, it's, I don't know how they've paced it so well, considering it's so procedurally generated in a lot of parts. And I think that just helps because of the atmosphere, because of this kind of like vague story thing, and because of, you know, the ultimate world that you're in and exploring.
I was going to ask, because like Hades felt like it sort of set this new bar on how to even do a story in a roguelike. And I know that we're only talking about the first two biomes and the first one of the first bosses. But I guess comparing those two, did it pull you? Because Hades is known for making this incredible first impression where it's like, oh my God, this is such a intricately designed mythos and lore. And you can feel the amount of, just the sheer amount of writing that went into that game to make all that stuff work. And did you get a similar vibe from Returnal? Because I was just, I said this to you before, you know, the podcast and stuff. It's like, if I was part of Housemarque and I was making this supposedly revolutionary, you know, new next gen roguelike take on the genre and everything, and then I saw Hades, I would be kicking myself, because I'd be really annoyed that the thing that we were going to debut has maybe been done better. How are the Hades comparisons?
I think it's like inevitable, you know, it's one of the most highly acclaimed roguelikes to ever come out. One of the best games of last year or whatever, won all these awards. So there's going to be like these obvious comparisons. And I guess there are differences between the two. You know, Hades is, like you said, so like dialogue driven in a lot of ways. You're constantly talking to these different gods. You're constantly returning to your home base, talking to a bunch of people. Whereas in Returnal, it's just you on your lonesome trying to like figure things out. So it's a lot of like Celine talking to herself. It's a lot of Celine but getting the audio logs from her other like failed runs where she's died, which is really interesting and grim. So you've kind of got characters, but the characters are all like other versions of her, which is quite interesting.
How much does it feel like? I don't know why my brain is flying towards the end of Live, Die, Repeat, where you get those like the Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. I like they get into the end sort of section. The aliens all look gooey. They look a bit like some of the visuals I've seen from that game. And I don't know. Now I'm thinking of Live, Die, Repeat and how much I love that film. And I don't know. Now I'm. Can you say? I guess you're smiling. Are you allowed to speak? Or
I think I'm allowed to speak. You know, it's just a natural comparison.
Am I totally off the ball there? Like some of the stylings of how the story might go out, or.
Well, not necessarily how the story will end up, but, you know, the idea of it being like, you know, lived out.
Is she aware of this? I don't even know. Yeah. Okay, cool. I don't even know how to say that. Is she aware of this situation she's been bestowed upon her of not being able to?
Well, I mean, the footage properly that's out there at the minute is already the very beginning of the game. IGN did the very beginning of it. So there is like Celine finding her first self and then realizing that she has been here before.
Yeah, that's just like, and that's like an interesting part of it as well, because, you know, you're practically like Celine is her own character, but she's also an avatar for you because you're both exploring the world together. You both understand that you're trapped in this time loop. So every single time you die, every single time you get kicked back, like her exasperation with it kind of like mimics your own. You know, if you're very close to getting to the end of the first biome or beating the first boss or whatever, then you get kicked back and you both are like, damn it, but you still have that drive to kind of go again. Now, seeing a lot of comparisons with Live, Die, Repeat / Edge of Tomorrow, whatever you want to call it. And I do think that's quite apt as well. They're like stylistically a little bit similar. And, you know, not like overtly so, but I think that's quite a good point of comparison. If you've if you enjoy that movie, I feel like a lot of that would translate over to the game as well.
It looks like the visuals of like the new Alien films, where they're more tied up and clean, and the themes of Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow. So, like, yeah, it kind of sounds like my stuff. I'm excited.
I think for me, like, the biggest thing is that we don't know how it's going to go. We have no, like, we know, like, it's a third person shooter, and that's kind of it. And we know it's a roguelike, but then it's just like the way the story's been done, the way the story's been presented, the fact that you access it kind of Hades style bits and pieces. It's sort of in the lore, it's sort of in, like, you know, you're going to get some dedicated cutscenes. I just love that we don't fully know everything going in, which is such a rarity these days. Like, most of the time now, you know exactly what you're getting.
At least it's something different and it's not open world and all this sort of thing. Like, I'm here for something new and different. Mm-hmm. I think there's just the barrier of like, oh, it's do I want to spend this much on the roguelike? And I guess this is a hump me and we as humans have to get over at some point.
I'm super, super curious because obviously the launch day is the 30th, and I think that like a lot of the reception has been super positive so far. All the preview stuff, like our preview was like very positive. And I'm just like, the general, you know, vibe around it is you should play this game, but I feel like the £70 price point or $70 or whatever is such a massive barrier. And like, I had just put out like a little Twitter poll a couple of weeks ago just saying like, is this going to get in the way for a lot of people? And that was the most popular response, just people just saying like, I'm just going to have to wait until it goes down. I'm curious how that pairs off.
Not even Resident Evil 8 on PS5 is that much. It's just $54.99.
It's very like Sony pricing point. It's very them going, oh, we're first party. Like, you know, we are big Sony. And I wonder whether that actually did with the foot.
Like, it's really frustrating because I think, you know, obviously that price point, it's going to benefit the biggest of the biggest Sony first party games. You know, it's not going to affect God of War. It's not going to affect Horizon. It's certainly not going to affect Spider-Man 2. Like, they're going to make more money. People are going to buy them regardless. Mm-hmm. But what it pushes out are these kind of like quote unquote riskier projects where, you know, Housemarque, if you love PlayStation, you probably love Housemarque's previous games. But, you know, to like the casual fan, they're not going to look at that name in the same way they look at, you know, Naughty Dog. They'll recognize that. They'll know the history of that. They'll have played Naughty Dog games and therefore might be more willing to spend £70 on it. Here, like Roy was saying, you know, you've got this roguelike, you've got this, you know, studio that hasn't done anything on this scale before. You've got it coming out on the PlayStation 5, £70. It's a lot to think about. And I think ultimately, you know, not just Returnal, but other games like it in the future, I think the price point just works against it, you know, and it kind of, and it sucks for them because it's almost like Sony's creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. If they release games like this for £70 and no one plays them, and then everyone still plays and buys, you know, God of War and stuff, they're going to say, well, people only want to play God of War, people only want to play Spider-Man, so then they'll stop greenlighting these in the first place, but ignoring the fact that, you know, it's just a high barrier for entry, and it's a lot of money for someone to spend on something that they might be unsure about, especially at launch, you know?
Yeah, this is not the release to trial a higher price point on.
And with Housemarque, like they've only had smaller games done before, and mm-hmm. then they had that battle royale that they sort of canned, mm-hmm. I think at the last hour. And like, I get that this is a luxury hobby, and I mean we're arguing over the price point of like $10-15, and like, is that really on the grand scheme? But I think it does so much for like the minutiae at the front, like it's just that extra number, like the way that people price things, $199, like you have the 99 on.
Yeah, there's a whole psychology to it.
Yeah, it's hit different that way. I think if it was, I mean, I've seen it out there in like some places for 60 already, like you can sell websites, but like, I think because it's just hit that way, and if it was the 60, I might have tried to squeeze it in between RE8 and the Mass Effect trilogy. But yeah, I'm not worried, but because of Housemarque's come out of this sort of like weird period, and they sort of, it feels like they're leveling up, even though if you make smaller games, you're not bad. But like, it feels like they're going into a new sort of area where they've not really done this before. Mm-hmm. And then they've got the £70 hurdle to deal with. And then we've had all the Days Gone stuff recently. And then we've,
yeah, I mean, that's the
and
thing.
Then I'm going to buy, I mean, I'm an idiot because I'll spend £70 for the Last of Us remake because I'm an idiot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know what's the, I'm the probably the problem here.
There are so many conversations right now around, you know, which titles within Sony's catalog get supported. There was that whole thing from, it was John Garvin, one of the ex-Sony Ben guys, saying, look, if you want to support something like Days Gone, pay full price for it at launch. And obviously that's a whole conversation around just throwing your money at something and hoping for the best. But that almost carries over to this, where you want to support new IP and you want to support new ideas and hope that it like pays off in the long run. But like, it's just, I'm just super fascinated how that goes. I guess we'll know by this time next week at the initial weekend sales and everything, whether or not the positive reception to it actually translates into sales, or whether Sony just ended up shooting themselves in the foot. Because to bring it back to the developer side, like you said, this is their most ambitious project by a landslide. Like, they're such a nicely trusted arcade-y style studio, and to branch out into what looks like this insanely ambitious, you know, third person 3D roguelike that's a bullet hell yeah. shooter that's never been done in 3D apart from Risk of Rain 2 or some of the Nier games, then I want to see it pay off, and I just kind of hope that it does. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below of the Resident Evil demos, if you've managed to get some hands on time, or what you think of Returnal. Will you be picking it up, or does the price tag make you run for the hills? For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
I'm going to go and play some more Roy Public Commando now.
That's horrible. And Josh Brown.
I'm going to play some Roy Turnal and then I'll be back.
Fantastic. Catch you next time. Bye.
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 See you later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.